I've been working at McDonald's for almost a year now. The job isn't anything to boast about, but since it covers my car insurance and rent, I keep doing it. The place is usually dead after 11 p.m. Most nights, it's just me, the fry station, and the occasional late-night customers. I can't say every night goes the same because the memory of that one night still haunts me in my dreams. It was a mundane Tuesday, and I was sitting alone at the counter watching the rain, accompanied by flashes of lightning. It had been almost 2 hours, and no customers walked in. But the company policy compelled me to stay open instead of locking up and going home. The hum of the fryer and the dull thud of rain against the roof were the only sounds traveling inside the restaurant. I was casually loitering behind the counter when the entrance door jingled. It startled me not because of the sound, but because I hadn't heard a car pull up. I turned around and saw an old woman standing in the entrance. She wore a thick, moth-bitten coat, even though it was warm inside. Her face was caked with clown-like makeup, white foundation, exaggerated red lipstick, and faded blue eyeshadow smeared on her eyelids. She had vibrant red nails, which were so long that they kind of creeped me out. She held an oversized Stanley cup in both hands, covered in chipped glitter and scratches.
Are you open?
We are indeed. She smiled at me, and I immediately felt cold. Her coffee-stained yellow teeth flashing from the red lips made it difficult to look at her face for more than 3 seconds. It was one of those too wide, too forced smiles, the kind that make you feel like something was deeply wrong, even if you couldn't explain why. She walked up to the counter and said in this squeaky voice,
"Just a small fries, dear."
I rang her up. She paid in exact change, each coin placed slowly into my palm. Then she shuffled to the farthest corner booth, clutching her Stanley cup. Customers are weird sometimes. That comes with the job, so I didn't think much. I dropped the fries in the oil and watched her sitting at the corner table. She didn't move much, just sipped from her cup, slowly, carefully, like she was savoring each gulp. But soon, I started noticing something weird. Every time she took a sip, red liquid trickled down her chin. At first, I thought it was ketchup, but she wasn't eating yet. And then, I saw her tongue. She darted it out, licked the red line, and smiled to herself like it tasted sweet. I don't know why, but the hairs on the back of my neck stood up. I went to the back, pretending to check the stockroom. My heart was racing for no reason I could explain. It's not like she was doing anything illegal, but something about the way she sipped and the way she looked made my stomach twist, and I was very suspicious about the content of her cup. I quietly called 911. I told them I wasn't sure what was going on, but there was an older woman behaving strangely. I said she had blood on her chin. I didn't know what else to say without sounding paranoid. 15 minutes later, two officers pulled into the lot. The rain was still coming down hard. I unlocked the door to let them in and pointed toward the booth. She was still there, sipping and smiling like a crazy person. The young officer approached her gently, crouching a little so he wasn't towering over her.
"Ma'am, can we take a quick look at your cup?"
She tightened her grip immediately.
"It's mine. I need it. I'm still drinking."
The older officer stepped in.
"We understand. We just want to make sure everything's okay. Please?"
It took a full minute, but eventually they convinced her to hand it over. Her hands were shaking. She looked like she was about to cry. As soon as they took the lid off, the younger cop reeled back. My body went into shock mode as I found out what was inside. There were severed human fingers floating inside the cup. It looked bloated and probably belonged to a man. The water in the cup turned red, and blood was dripping from the fingers. The woman first stared at the cup and then turned her gaze toward me. She knew I was the one who called the cops. A cruel smile appeared on her face.
"I cleaned them for him. He touched her with those fingers. I had to make it right."
The officers quickly placed her under custody. She didn't resist. She just kept mumbling to herself.
"He said he was sorry, but it was too late.
Later that night, after the scene cleared, one of the officers came back to grab the security footage. I asked him if she was mentally ill or something. He gave me a grim update. Her name's Eleanor Kessler. We found her husband dead at their house. Eleanor butchered him for cheating on her with his secretary. That cup she brought in? That was his anniversary gift to her. The cup is custom-made, engraved, and has a capacity of nearly 40 ounces. He paused. According to her, it holds more than we can imagine. That was the last thing he said before he left. I didn't finish my shift. My manager came in early to relieve me. I didn't go to work the next 2 days. I kept thinking about the red line on her chin, the way she licked it with that sick, satisfied look in her eyes, the way she clutched that Stanley cup like it was more important than her life. It's been 3 weeks now. I still work at the same McDonald's, but I can't walk past that corner booth without glancing twice. Some nights, I'll think I see her there, just for a second, sitting with her coat zipped up to her chin, watching me. People think that the mean kids, the ones who wear black, lurk, and frown in the back of the class, are always the ones who cause trouble. Well, that's not always true. I was a good kid. I did well in school. I had some friends, but not many. I was quiet, normal, and easy to forget in the crowd of students, which meant that being compared to Tessa always made me feel like I wasn't good enough. Tessa was the type of girl who floated instead of walked. Her beautiful brown hair, accompanied by charming laughter, pulled everyone's attention towards her, not just by classmates. She was also my teacher's favorite. I mean, it was frustrating to witness how things just went her way, even when she hardly put in any effort. All the nerdy, unpopular kids admired him. Everyone wanted to be her, even when she was mean to them. I still remember it was a Tuesday when this happened. Before first class, there was always a lot of noise in the hallways. Tessa walked in with a new Stanley cup in her hand. It was one of those limited edition shimmering cups that sold out online in hours. I was sitting at my desk in my homeroom. She flashed it like a prize, and a lot of students crowded around her.
Oh my god, Tessa! Is that the new shimmer lavender? It's very hard to get. What can I say? Rare things find rare people.
Tessa smirked, giving me a side eye while clutching the cup in her hands. I could tell she was trying to make me jealous, and I guess she succeeded. While walking past me, she even knocked me with her elbow on the head. Something inside me broke. I kept telling myself not everyone gets what they want, but deep down, I knew I wanted something more than Tessa's cup. I wanted to rip off that sly smirk from her face forever. I could no longer think straight by fifth period. Tessa was sitting next to me, yet behaved like I didn't exist. The next class was gym, and I watched Tessa leave her things on her desk to head for the changing room. Her shiny new Stanley cup sat prominently on her desk, constantly reminding me that I would never be the special one. The room slowly became empty. I stayed back. My hands were getting cold and my breathing grew rapid. I looked at the cup and then I looked around. There was no one there. I went over to her desk and picked it up. I didn't think it would be that heavy. I could see how the shimmer changed with the light reflecting on it. I held it over the floor, ready to let go. I grinned, thinking how Tessa will break down crying when she finds her dearest cup damaged. It gave me goosebumps, thinking I finally found a way to beat the most popular girl in school. If I can't be her, then I'll destroy what's hers forever. But just as I was about to smack it on the floor, I heard Tessa's voice from behind.
What are you doing?
I turned. Tessa stood in the doorway, eyes wide in anger. I would have put the cup down, letting the entire thing go. I would have apologized to her, saying it was just a stupid decision I was going to take in the heat of the moment. But she said something that stopped me from being the good kid.
How dare you touch my cup with your filthy hands?
She started coming closer.
You think breaking it will make you me? You're nothing but trash. And that's what you'll be for the rest of your life. It's just a cup, right?
I shot back, louder than I intended. She just kept walking towards me.
Of course you're jealous of me. You're such a freak.
I told her to back off. She didn't. She shoved me. It wasn't hard, but it made the cup slip from my hand. It hit the floor with a dull thud, but didn't break. My hand hit the desk as I tried to catch myself. In that moment, I lost it. There was a sharp pencil on the nearby desk. I picked it up without thinking. And then, Tessa picked up her cup. The same evil smirk was back on her face.
These cups don't break so easily, you know? But how would you? The cup's worth is higher than your dad's paycheck, girl.
With one swing, I stabbed her in the eye with the pencil, and her scream echoed in the school. Blood spilled down her cheek. She dropped to the floor, thrashing. The pencil was still stuck deep in her eye. She was writhing in pain, lying on the ground. Blood was everywhere, and her body trembled like a headless chicken. People came rushing. I don't remember much after that. There was screaming. Someone pulled me out of the room. Someone else held Tessa down while she cried and bled and begged for help. They said I stood in the hallway until the school counselor came and took me away. Tessa survived, but she lost her left eye. She has to wear a prosthetic now. Her face is scarred. Later, I heard she left school in the neighborhood with her parents. As for me, I was arrested. They tried me as a minor. I spent 3 years in juvenile detention and 2 more years of court-mandated therapy. Now, I talk at schools. Not because I want to. I am compelled to do so. They bring me into classrooms and auditoriums where I explain to students how envy consumes one's soul, how I let a stupid Stanley Cup and everything it represented destroy my life and someone else's. I show them the cup. Yes, Tessa's Stanley Cup. It's cracked now, dented at the base from when it hit the floor that day. They gave it to me after the trial as part of my rehabilitation program. This object serves as a daily reminder of my guilt for the rest of my life. Every time I see it sparkle under the lights, I remember the blood. I remember the scream Tessa let out, the look in her good eye when she realized what I'd done. This happened last Friday. It was one of those slow, cloudy afternoons where the sky looked beat up and the mall parking lot was almost empty. I had the day off, so I finally went to look for the Stanley Cup that was trending so much online. They were sold out everywhere, so I went to a mall 15 minutes from home to see if I could get one. It wasn't a big spot. Since COVID, half of the shops have closed, but sometimes those smaller shops had stock that wasn't sold. I believed it was worth attempting. When I got inside, I went through the west hallway because the carpet still smelled like glue and old popcorn. A few kids were hanging out near the food court, but aside from that, the area felt quite deserted. I looked in 2 department stores, but couldn't find the item I was searching for. As I was walking back to the exit, I saw a small store I had never seen before. It was hidden between a luggage store and a gloomy arcade. A faded sign that said Gifts and Collectibles was all it had for a name. Inside, the glass door was dirty, and there were lots of old toys, mugs, keychains, and other things that looked like they belonged in a thrift store. I didn't have much hope, but it was worth a try. I walked in and heard the bell above the door ring. A man was sitting behind the cash counter. He looked to be in his mid-50s. He had greasy gray hair and a polo shirt that was too big for his pants. I felt jitters because of his smile. He grinned so big that it felt as if he was trying too hard to be nice. He asked me before I even spoke, "Looking for the Stanley Cups, right?" I was so shocked that I didn't blink for a few seconds.
"Well, yeah."
He leaned in and spoke softly.
"The good ones are all down in the basement. People are crazy about them, you know."
I didn't like the way he spoke. He was too eager to show me the stock. I didn't want to be rude, though. I ignored the warning signs because I thought maybe he did have the cups, and it would only be a matter of minutes. I agreed. He came around the counter, grabbed a ring of keys, and gestured for me to follow. Behind the counter, there was a narrow door that led to a dark tunnel that I hadn't seen before. It led to a metal door at the end, which he opened. It was dark, and the stairs were made of concrete. I could feel the temperature drop as we went down. There were a few flickering lights, and the air had a faint smell of mold and metal. I began to feel uncomfortable. I tried to break the quiet by saying,
"I didn't catch your name."
He paused for a second, like he was deciding whether he should tell me or not. Then he said in a low voice,
"You girls sure love these shiny things, ready to spend a lot just to stay relevant."
I stopped.
"What?"
He chuckled and said he was just joking, but I could feel a twist in my chest. I looked up at the door we came down from and realized that if something happened to me in the basement, no one would know. A cold shiver ran down my spine.
My mom is waiting in the car. Maybe I should get her as well. She just texted me.
He stopped walking. I could see the twitch in his face. His jaw got tight. He suddenly replied,
"There are no cups here."
Now his voice was different. It's cold, no longer having to act so nice. He also said,
"You need to leave."
I quickly ran up the stairs, two at a time. I don't think I breathed until I ran back into the store. It didn't bother me if people saw me run. When I pushed the door open, I almost fell on the tile floor outside. As soon as I got to my car, I shut the door and started crying. It was like all the alarm bells I had been ignoring went off all at once. He knew what I wanted before I even said it. The shop was in a strange place, and there were no customers or stock to be seen. The most important thing was the way his voice changed when he heard that someone knew my whereabouts. I drove home straight away, shaking the whole time. I tried to find the store online later that night, but nothing came up. There was no listing, no Google ratings, and no social media. Like, it wasn't there. My boyfriend and I went back to the mall the next morning to see if it was still there. It was closed. The door had chains and a big padlock. Paper was put over the windows, and the only thing stuck to the glass was a note that said, "Closed permanently," in handwriting. I asked a security guard at the parking lot what had happened to the store. His face looked confused.
"What store? It hasn't been rented in months."
We were still for a moment. It felt like my throat got tight. I still have no idea what I walked into. That man really wanted me to follow him, but I have no idea who he was or what his intention was behind taking me to that sketchy basement. I think about it all the time, though. If I hadn't talked about my mom, if I had gone all the way down to that basement, could I have ever made it?